College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. I'm your host, Kevin Negandhi. I hope everybody that's listening is safe and healthy. I got a special guest today. It is my good friend, Mack Brown, legendary head coach at Texas, Hall of Famer, and now the head coach at North Carolina. We'll talk a little bit about how his team is approaching, how his program is approaching the fall, and what protocols that they have in place, and his mindset during the pandemic. And the biggest challenge, of course, while, you know, overseeing hundreds of people when you talk about players and staff and keeping everyone safe. Before we get to Mack, check out the latest edition of the Adam Schefter podcast. This week, Adam's joined by Steelers running back James Conner, who talks about training in quarantine, the expectations for this upcoming season, and his new book. Then we'll hear from Dr. Tom Mayer, who says players may be recommended new helmets and face masks for this upcoming season that would help prevent the spread of COVID-19. That is the Adam Schefter podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. On to Mack Brown. He's a national champion, a Hall of Fame coach, a close and dear friend of mine, and the head coach at North Carolina. And he put a stone cold whooping on my Temple Owls during the bowl season. Great to have Mack Brown join us here on the College Football Podcast. Mack, what has the experience been like for you and Sally during the pandemic and times that we've never experienced before?
Kevin, they're, number one, I'm very honored to be on with my friend, and I'm glad you still speak to me after the bowl game. I wasn't sure that would happen, but it took a while. You had to warm back up, but that's okay. We even named a play after you for the game, but that's okay. Kevin, there's no playbook for what we've all been through. Normally, I went through 9/11 as a head coach, and the fear of that day and canceling games that weekend and trying to find all your players and their parents and making sure everybody was okay. And that still impacts us today. But none of us have ever seen anything like this and what it's done. And all of a sudden we're sitting there watching basketball tournaments at spring break, getting ready for spring practice the next Tuesday. And we moved spring break back for 2 weeks instead of one. We still think we're going to practice and everything's okay. And they drop the NBA. They drop the March Madness. They get rid of the tournament. And in one 24-hour period, Kevin, I'm sitting there talking to our athletics director, and he said, we're supposed to have a staff meeting. And he said, let's move it upstairs so you can spread out further. And I said, okay, I got you. And then he said, you know what, let's do it on Zoom, because I don't think we're going to have spring practice. And I think they're going to have all the classes online. So in a 24-hour period, we went from sitting down together in a normal staff meeting to learning what Zoom was and having a Zoom staff meeting. And as a staff, we haven't seen each other since. And we're talking about months now. So and then players that left their stuff in their dorm went home for spring break and never came back. And then they thought they might need those dorms for hospitals. So hospital beds. So they had them all come back at different times and get their stuff. So I think the biggest thing, Kevin, is that when you have things that you love taken away, and you and I are people that love our friends. We love our relationships. We like to talk. We like to go to dinner. We like to have conversations. Those have been taken away. So there's a certain amount of grief. There's a certain amount of depression, anxiety with people through all this. The deaths are absolutely horrible. We're all learning how to do more things online and do more things from home. So that's a positive. The environment's gaining from it, and we'll come out stronger on the back end. But I think the biggest thing has been unanswered questions, because we're just, players are constantly, when are we coming back? Are we going to have a season? Fans, are we going to have a season? You're living in that business of how many times can you show the 97 NBA championship game and get people to watch it? I mean, so I think the biggest thing is just the unanswered questions. We're having to develop a map and a playbook as we go. And we're having to be really strong leaders, because you worry about the mental health of people You worry about people losing jobs. You see these awful lines with kids not being able to eat, and all of that affects us. So I think that's the biggest thing. Great leaders take times of crisis and turn them into positive, and that's what all of us have to be doing right now.
How are you communicating with your players? Is it through Zoom? Is it through texting? How are you making sure they're okay, or how's your staff doing that?
It's mostly through Zoom. We want to have contact with them every day. I'm in the process of calling every player on our team and just sitting down and saying, are you okay? And listen, I think we will have football. We haven't been told 100%, but I think we will. So be accountable. Still got to do your academic work. Make sure you're in shape. Well, coach, I don't have a gym. I can't get in. Well, put books in a backpack and run with them or do squats with them. You can do something to continue to work. So our strength coaches, our nutritionists have done a great job of reaching out to them. Our academic counselors, you can imagine, Kevin, they're in Zoom classes and they're getting tutoring over Zoom. So we've had to learn a completely new way to do things. We have a staff meeting for an hour every Monday morning and every Friday morning. And we've had great staff meetings. So we have learned how to communicate better without having to be in the building together. We've had a high school coaches clinic for our high school coaches in our state every Wednesday. And all of our coaches have been on, and it's had tremendous reception. So there's a lot of things that we're learning and how to communicate that we didn't know before that should help us, because our chancellor made a statement the other day, Kevin, that really got my heart. He said, we're going to have the reimagine new normal. And we're just all going to be doing a lot of things that we didn't do in our past to make this thing work moving forward.
You're the type of person, and I love talking to you, because you find something positive regardless of the situation by reemphasizing it a couple times in this conversation about communication. Like, you're learning a new level of communication with everybody, and that is so appropriate in this time. But the reality is, too, here, Mac, is you're 68 years old. How are you approaching things with your own health here and the concerns that you have with the pandemic? You're concerned about your kids. You're concerned about your staff. How about yourself? What are you doing to make sure you're taken care of?
Kevin, I've been walking about 3 miles every day. My dog's losing weight. He won't speak to me anymore. He runs when I get his lead. So I'm probably in better shape than I've been in 20 or 25 years. I'm being very, very careful. I'm going by the guidelines. I wear a mask when I'm supposed to. I wash my hands probably 25 times a day. We have disinfectants that we spray throughout the house. So Sally is 65. She and I are taking this very seriously, not only for us, but for our grandkids. We're staying away from our kids and our grandkids. And we're pretty much in our house. I mean, we haven't been out a whole lot. I'll run to the office some to pick up mail. But when I sit and watch TV, and see the first responders and the healthcare workers that are out there in the middle of this virus, fighting every minute of every day. Many of them are older. Many of them have kids at home, families that could be infected. Then I'm not going to be scared of it, Kevin. I'm going to go back to work, and I'm going to do my best. And hopefully I don't catch it. If I do, I'm going to fight it, and I'm going to beat it and get right back to work. But it, while we're encouraged to sit on our couch, we've got some heroic stories in our country right now for people that are so tough and that are so out there trying to help us get through this thing.
There's the reality, too, and well said, that we live in a bubble, and we're worried about, hey, how do we make sure we have our kids engaged as well on campus? But then you put it in the proper perspective. There are people on the front lines, the healthcare workers, as well as the first responders, are doing this on a daily basis. Your normal delivery man or delivery woman, they're in the middle of it 6-7 days a week, and they don't ask questions. They just do their job, and it's great perspective. There is, though, One other thing that's outstanding here that I'm sure that's on your radar, assistant coach Jovan DeWitt, he recently survived a bout with throat cancer, and he's in his first year with you guys after working at Nebraska last season. Have you guys discussed protocols on if a player or someone around the program does test positive for COVID-19 on how to handle people that are more susceptible to containing or getting the virus?
Kevin, we're in the process of doing that right now. We're fortunate that we live in a very educated area with tremendous hospitals and healthcare people and doctors that are brilliant. I made a really stupid statement when this first happened. You heard me make a lot of stupid statements in my 3 years. That doesn't surprise you, but I was on a show, I can't remember what it was, and somebody said, "Can you imagine having football without fans?" And my first reaction was, "I love our fans. I can't imagine that. Why if it's not safe for the fans, why would it be safe for the players?" And then I took a step back and I kept watching TV and I kept listening to our medical experts and disease control people, and I thought, that's their job. That's not my job. My job is to get our team ready to play. Their job is to make sure it's safe for fans and the team to play, or they won't let us play. So I learned quickly, Kevin, to get in my lane and ask questions and prepare my team. That's my job. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert. I've got no clue what's going on. I do what I'm told to do. So I've been very, very proud of Kevin Gustowitz, our new chancellor, and he grew up in the medical business. In fact, he was the leading researcher on concussion protocol in the country. So he's on the medical side. Bubba Cunningham, our athletics director, has done a great job of leading. They're talking to the NBA. They're talking to NFL. They're talking to major corporations. They're learning how to clean our facilities. They're talking about reentry of players and what that would mean with testing, what that would mean with taking your temperature before you come in the building, what happens if you do have an inflated temperature, what happens if you do have a positive. I think we're all going to have protocol in place that if a young man gets the virus during football season, I don't think they're going to cut down the whole football season and do away with it, but we're going to have a protocol. Where does he go? What, does he get to the hospital? Does he get in quarantine? What about the people that have been around him? And these brilliant people, Kevin, are working on this every day. I think we'll be wearing masks in the office. I don't think we'll be having our meetings where we used to have them in smaller rooms. I think we will all be in larger rooms. It's interesting in that they're going to leave the number of chairs in a room that it's safe for social distancing. They're going to take the rest of the chairs out, and they're going to have a maximum limit for every room in our building. And then they're going to say that if you don't have a chair, you can't be in this meeting, and you're going to have a mask on. They're going to keep the doors open. They're going to have very few people on the elevators. And if you are on an elevator, you're going to have a dot where you have to stand. And is it one on an elevator at a time or two? So we're going to be doing a lot of walking up and down stairs. And the confusing part is football players hug and they high five and they're going to have interaction with each other. Coaches do the same. So how much will that change for us? And we're having to relearn all of this. And players are asking me those questions. And I'm saying, I'm the worst. I love hugging you guys, and high-fiving you, and patting you on the tail. And all of that stuff may change now. And I hope that at some point we get back to it. But right now, all of us have to do what's safe. And even in the staff meeting this morning, Monday morning, I told our staff, you may not be worried about the virus. You may not want to wear a mask. You're not going to have any choice because you need to make sure other people like Jovan DeWitt feel comfortable with there. And then the last thing, Kevin, I kind of rambled on your question there. For Jovan, who did have throat cancer and he's in a perfect place right now. He had his last evaluation and he's good for another year. I've told him you may have to work from home some. You may want to do Zoom because they say the more you're in the building, the worse it can be. And he's been great. And he said, Coach, I want to come to work. I'm healthy. I'm doing good. I'm taking care of myself. So we'll just have to look at that. And that's another protocol is what if somebody says I'm uncomfortable. I don't want to come to work. But what if a player says, Coach, I don't want to come back. I'm afraid. So all of those things are unanswered questions that we're going to have to deal with if they come up.
You know, mentioning the meeting rooms and closing things down and expanding and in the sense of closing the small rooms down, and expanding and going into bigger rooms with seating separate. I think of immediately your interaction during lunchtime with your team after practice. I've been around. I've seen you. You're a hugger. You're a handshake guy. You're very intimate with players coming by and having conversations. If we expand that here to travel, that plays a role. Have you guys talked a little bit, you and Bubba, as well as, your staff and coaches in the ACC on what the schedule would look like potentially on slimming this down, trimming it down, and maybe just playing conference teams?
Kevin, there has been conversation all over the map. I mean, just conference games, playing a bunch of conference games, playing in spring. And when I made my stupid statement, that's when I said, okay, back in my lane. I'm not worried about anything except when they tell me to show up, having our kids safe and having our team ready to play. What I'm planning on is they have told us from the beginning they'd like to see if we could come back to work around June 15th as a staff. They'd like to see our players get back around the 1st of July, which would give us 4 or 5 weeks to prepare in the offseason to get ready to start practice on August 6th. And right now they're planning on having the regular season. They've talked about getting smaller planes and spreading people out and maybe use 2 or 3 planes instead of one. They've talked about busing when it's possible to bus and take maybe 6 buses or more buses so you can really spread each other out. So I'm really impressed by the amount of detail that our medical team is working on to make sure that our guys are safe. They've got a plan for lunch and for dinner. I haven't gotten that far yet. They suppose I've asked, what happens after practice? When you've got 150 guys in a locker room that sit right next to each other. I mean, do we now have to stagger the way we go shower? So there's just, again, so many unanswered questions that we're dealing with now. Every day something comes up and you say, huh, I hadn't thought about that, but that's an issue. That's why I'm calling all the guys. And I'm saying, guys, it is going to be different. And I also told the staff Monday morning, don't gripe about guidelines. Go by them. Because the people in charge think this is the safest way for us, and we have to take care of each other, and we have to take care of our players. So let's do what we're supposed to do. Don't gripe about your mask. Put it on. Put it on. And not just for you. Put it on for somebody else. Put it on because we're supposed to. And put it on because maybe somebody else sees you and they will wear it because they want football season. And it helps save a life. So that's kind of the approach we're taking.
Well said. Lean on the experts, and your leadership will carry down. It's a trickle-down effect. They watch you, and then they will follow. They watch the coaching staff, and then they would follow. Because, again, when you're talking about 18 to 22-year-olds, they could be aware of the situation, but a lot of them also think they're immortal, and they haven't come across the idea of, hey, something could seriously happen, you know, health-wise, because they're in the best shape of their lives and they don't know any different. So following your footsteps.
Well, thank you, Kevin. But the good thing is we've been where they are. They haven't been where we are. So that's why they need to listen to us on this one.
Mm-hmm. Well said there. And I'm not gonna make you give us a prediction here because you've brought it up a couple times, but it is interesting what Gene Smith, the Ohio State AD, said yesterday with the expectations down the road. And again, this is a fluid situation. On a daily basis, it changes. But yesterday he was asked about attendance, and he made a comment where, you know, he could see 22,000 fans. He could see potentially if the guidelines are loosened up by the time the fall is, because we're 100 days away from the season starting, where it could expand to 40 to 50,000 fans in the horseshoe. I'm not asking for you to make a prediction on that number. I'm asking you, what would it be like as a head coach at North Carolina, where these kids had that experience from a year ago, where it was a packed house. You guys had sellouts. You brought the people back when you came back to Chapel Hill. What do you think that experience is going to be like, where there are maybe 5 to 10,000 fans, or maybe 100 fans in attendance watching games? Have you talked to your staff about getting them mentally ready, the players ready for that?
Kevin, we have. And what we've said is we need to do whatever they tell us is safe, and we need to do whatever we need to do within those guidelines to make sure that we still get to play. I've heard they may stagger fans coming in the stadiums and say this section has to be here at 4 o'clock. This section has to come in at 4:30. I've heard they're going to looking at having a lot more concession stands, a lot more bathrooms, and again, have a dot where you have to stand, so you're socially distancing. I've heard some people even talk about they might take some seats out, so someone couldn't sit right next to someone else. So I think, again, because all of these questions are unanswerable right now, what we've got to do is we prepare our team. What the athletic directors have to do is they've got to take care of their fan base and their season ticket holders and their students and their sponsors. And what does that mean? And if you do start limiting fans in the stadium, who do you cut out? So it's never been a tougher time to be a governor or to be a mayor or to be an athletics director or even a president, because will some young students be afraid to come back to school? Will they want to defer this year and wait till next year if they're an incoming freshman? There's so many things now that we're dealing with. And the other thing is things are better now in a lot of ways than they were 2 months ago, because we're learning more. So hopefully by the 1st of June, by the 1st of July, by the 1st of August, we will have made more progress and we'll have more answers by then. So I just think about the spring break. I was sitting there. I was kind of like a lot of people and said, are you kidding me? We're cutting down, we're throwing out basketball tournaments for a virus.
Yeah.
And a couple of our coaches were a little nervous about coming to work. And I thought, what? It's a virus. Come on. And then all of a sudden we see what's happened with the pandemic and the outbreak and people losing their lives. So, as doctors have told me, coach, this is very serious. And I'm treating it that way.
So normally we would start the conversation, we did about 15 to 20 minutes on the pandemic because we've never experienced anything like this before. But normally if you were on this show, my first question would be, how would you describe this second act of North Carolina at North Carolina? So let's go with the mindset outside of what we've dealt with the last 2 months. How would you describe you coming back, and leaving North Carolina to go to Texas, then going to ESPN and staying there for 5 years, working on ABC and ESPN. It may have been more than 5 years. And then coming back to coach again. How would you describe the second act and the experience in Chapel Hill so far?
Kevin, I've had a blast. It was the right thing to do. I loved our TV. I loved our teams in TV. Doing the games was great. Being on Countdown to Kickoff with you was so much fun. We got to sit there and cut up and laugh and watch so many games together and try to take the fans behind the scenes and let them know more about college football and the teams and the coaches and what we're doing. So it was a blessing for me. I think part of that, part of me in the TV business, I learned so much more about the media. So I have absolutely no stress with the media anymore. I understand the job now. I think it would be a blessing for every coach to spend a year with the media so they would understand how hard the job is. And it's not just that some media person's trying to rip some coach. He's actually doing his job or she's doing her job. And coaches don't get that. But the thing that I promised myself and I promised my wife, Sally, when I came back is I was going to have more fun. And I'm doing that. I'm enjoying the players. That's what I missed. That's what I came back for. I'm enjoying the coaches and the organization. And even as bad as this is this spring, the coaches need me. It's never been more important to have a strong leader. I've told our staff, thank goodness I hired a great staff, because we've got the responsibility of Carolina football and all the people that are involved with it, and especially the student athletes, without any control, because our control is by Zoom, by text. We can't look them in the eyes, and we can't visit with them one-on-one. We can get great speakers, which we have, to come in and talk to them. But it's just different. So, I think it's one of the things that it has gotten me some this spring. I came back to be around the kids, and now I can't. And all it's made me do is be more aware that's why I coach, and that, I want to win all the games, because you can't have the impact on the kids unless you win. But I've won enough games. I've had enough bowls. I've had enough rings. None of those things matter to me anymore. And very few coaches are in that position, Kevin. I am in such a great spot that I am coaching for all the right reasons right now. I'm not looking for another job. I'm healthy. I'm planning on coaching as long as I'm successful, in doing it. It's working. Recruiting's going well. The staff's excited. Did we miss spring practice? Yeah, I made a stupid decision. The strength coaches talked me into moving spring practice back 2 weeks so we could get stronger. And those 2 weeks cost us any spring practice. So they won't even come around me anymore. They're glad we're on Zoom. We missed it, but we had bowl practice. So our bowl practice really takes place of our spring practice. But it's fun. I'm enjoying it. And are there crisis? Are there tough days? Absolutely. But I'm taking those and trying to help young people learn how to turn them into positives.
Yeah. And one of the things that stood out for me with your experience last year is, you know, you and I had the chance, you were so kind to invite me to come down in August, and I didn't hesitate. I may have just said, I'm coming. and we spent for about 2 days there where we could see the environment and understand, you know, for me, it was seeing your passion coming through and talking to the kids. But I think the country saw all of that after the upset of South Carolina to start the season, and the dancing, the post game dancing, and what you're doing on the sidelines and your interaction with the kids. Like, take us through that whole experience, because again, one of the things you and I had talked about, and you're really good at downplaying things, but you hold yourself with a high standard. And entering that season, you had warned me. You're like, Kevin, we're going to figure this out, but it's going to take some time. We've got to teach these kids how to win. Boom, you get the upset of the opener, and then you push Clemson around to the edge. Like, what was that like in trying to teach these kids to have fun, but at the same time, understand how to win late in games?
First, I'm really disappointed that you and our ABC team never asked me to sing or dance.
We missed out.
I thought that would have been obvious to you, the talent level. So we're asking. I didn't think we knew our team very well. Our coaches and our team just weren't on the same page in preseason. So we ask every player to get up and tell his life story. Tell us about your family. How were you raised? What's happened great in your life? What's happened awful in your life? How'd you handle it? Who do you respect the most in your life? Who on this team do you respect the most? And there were some tough stories, and it really helped us. It pulled us all together. And then I made the coaches do it. Well, then they asked me to do it, and I did. I've been divorced, and I told them, this is tough. And they said, oh, really? You've got some bad things in your life, too. And I said, yeah, all of us do. It's just part of it. Well, to pick it up, I took young Dre Bly, who Hall of Famer, coaches our secondary, coaches our corners. And I said, get a dance contest started. That'll pick them up. So before every team meeting, we had a dance contest. And then at the end, they said, okay, you need to dance. And I said, I don't dance. And they said, whoa, 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 whoa. You said all in, man. You said all all inclusive. So you got to dance. I said, I'm Church of Christ. Church of Christ don't dance. They said, Coach, man, you said. I said, okay, you beat South Carolina, I'll dance. I'll dance in the dressing room, but I'm not dancing till you beat South Carolina. Well, I didn't think we were going to beat South Carolina. They were a lot better than we were. So I thought, I'm safe. So we beat South Carolina. I'm walking off the field. My sweet wife comes over and says, you're in trouble. And I said, what? What do you mean, sweetie? They're going to ask you to dance. And I said, no. That's been a long time ago. That's been 3 weeks. So they said, they're going to ask you to dance. Our friends from ESPN were in there with cameras. I walk in. Here's a 68-year-old, 2 months off a knee replacement. No music, by the way. And they're saying, dance, dance, dance. And I'm saying, oh, my gosh. They really want me to dance. So that's how the dancing occurred. Then we beat Miami the second week. They said, hey, you got to dance now. You got to dance when we win, Coach. So that's what I did.
I love it. I love it. And one of the reasons why that team responded to you and fell in love with you from the beginning, you make a commitment, you back it up, and you're experiencing their experiences. And one kid that stood out was Sam Howell. And in one sentence, because you've coached some great quarterbacks through the years, how would you describe Sam Howell?
He's a grinder. He works so hard. He studies so hard. Therefore, he leads because he's one of the hardest workers on our team. He's mature and confident beyond his years. He's tough. He had a sore ankle. He had a sore knee. One of the reasons I thought we played much better against Temple is he was healthy. And it was the last game where he could run. We didn't have an experienced backup for him, so we actually let him run some, and Temple couldn't have been ready for that because he couldn't run all year. But he was over a 3-point average on his grades. He's got very strong faith, and he has no hobbies. I mean, it's football. And his academics and his faith. And that's it. I asked him on Valentine's Day. I said, you got a Valentine's as popular as you are? And he says, yeah, it's Madden. I'm going to go home and play Madden, Coach. He said, that way I have no issues. Madden gets along with me very well.
So does he remind you of any quarterback you've coached in the past or any quarterback that you see in the game right now?
A lot of people have compared him to Baker Mayfield. And Baker won the Heisman. He had a great team at Oklahoma. So that's a very high goal for someone to try to get to. And I think there is some Baker Mayfield there. The closest he's been to for us is Colt McCoy because he's so accurate. Mm. And Colt was a good runner. Sam's a good runner. But they're accurate. And we used to go through practices, and Colt would never have a ball on the ground. I thought that's what practice was supposed to look like. Then we had a few couldn't complete balls against the air. And I said, guys, if you can't complete balls against the air, we can't play in the game. My gosh, Colt never had a ball on the ground. So that's the goal with our receivers and our quarterbacks. When we're throwing just against the air, there should never be an incompletion. And Sam's got that trait.
Where must he improve the most coming off that rookie season now that – you know, defensive coordinators have the tape on him?
I think it's just decision-making. He got so much publicity last year for touchdown passes and making plays, and we will improve. We didn't protect him very well early, so all the offensive linemen except Charlie Heck are back, basically. So we will do a better job, but I just think his decision-making, making sure he takes the right play instead of maybe what he thinks is the big play.
You got a strong recruiting class, Mac. You've got the magic. You walk into a room, suddenly you're getting everybody's attention. I've always said that if you decided to run for, you know, a governor, you would win that in a landslide just because of your approach and handling people around you. And this class is already in the top five when it comes to 2021. What's it like recruiting these days in Carolina when you have Dabo as a neighbor?
Well, Dabo's got arguably the best program in the country. And he's winning all the games. He's doing things right. He's got great kids and great players. So we've got to worry about us. And we have a great product. It's a tremendous academic school. Chapel Hill's a fun college town, and we can win football games. And people know that. They feel it right now. Last year we were selling, facts. And I've always thought, Kevin, if you had a product and you chose the right people that fit your place and should come to your place, and you're honest with them, and you're direct and sincere, then it works. And they want to come, and that's what we're doing. The other thing that people don't talk about enough, in my estimation, is the staff that you hire. We hired a staff that had recruited this state for many years. A lot of the guys have recruited this state for 15 years. And I said I didn't want to hire a staff that couldn't find their way to Charlotte. If you can't find your way around the state without a map, you probably shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. So I'm really pleased with our staff.
You talk about growing and coming back with a new look on life and a new perspective as a coach, but also a lot of things have changed. Players have changed. The how we approach things has changed. Where is the game in your mind changed the most from when you were at Texas to where, you know, the college game is right now over the last decade?
I think, Kevin, the game has changed the most with the early signing date. When you went through a coaching change at Temple where Jeff Collins leave, Manny Diaz comes in for a number of days, and then you have to hire another coach, and there's a signing date in the middle of all that. So now you're recruiting year-round, and you're recruiting guys that we're recruiting 22 and guys from the 23 class right now. So it's just crazy that there are no days off in recruiting anymore. And especially for a new coach, it makes it very, very difficult to be able to get a signing class that first year because you're being hired in December normally, and then sometimes maybe middle of December, and the signing date's December 18th or 19th. So it's just crazy that you have so little time, and that is one of your classes. That's your first class, and you're going to have to build on that moving forward.
It's crazy to think February has turned into like a footnote, right? Considering the buildup we had in January leading into February, and now February is looked as, hey, you know, who's left? Who has yet to sign? Who's dragging the process out? The last 3 years have changed dramatically. I'm going to give you the opportunity here, Mac, with your experience. If you were commissioner of college football, what would you change? The one rule, what would you change right now?
I think I would continue to modernize the scholarship. We did a great job getting more money through the scholarship in the hands of student athletes with the cost of attendance. So I would continue to look at that. I would not use name, image, and likeness like we're talking about using it, because it takes away from the collegiate experience and it takes away from amateurism. And we've always had the scholarships that had the same amount. So the backup right guard made the same amount of money with his scholarship that the starting quarterback. And I think if we're not really, really careful with that moving forward, Kevin, we're going to have division within our team and our locker room, because some are going to make more money than others. And at the same time, I think we're going to have division within athletic departments, because it's going to affect Title IX. Which sport does the guy or the lady get money from the most, from the car dealer? And it'll sure affect recruiting. As Dabo Sweeney said in one of our meetings, right now, if we're playing Temple, we'll have three coaches that will be watching the Temple roster. And on the sideline after the game, the best players, I'm going to go over and say, hey, how much money are you making with name, image, and likeness? Would you like to come with us? And Dabo said, well, quit having a handshake with coaches after the game. It'll be with the top player on the other team. And then you end up having four or five teams that are so much better than everybody else because all of the guys want to go there. And it will change college football as it is. So I'm all for us helping young people continue to improve their situations financially. That's all the coaches are. I'm all for a young man that wants to transfer to another school to be able to transfer But right now, Kevin, I'm afraid we're making decisions without guidelines. And just like we're so lucky with this pandemic that we've got medical people that are giving us guidance and trying to keep us safer. We've got to have people step up right now with name, image, and likeness and with one-time transfers and being eligible immediately to put guidelines in place. Number one, to make it safer for kids and make it better for kids, but make it where we don't lose amateurism and the college experience the way we've known it.
Yeah, my biggest fear, and we've mentioned Temple a couple of times, is the way it is the Power Five, and you could see the Power Five eventually down the road break off. And we see these 60-plus teams in one section and everybody else, you know, kind of like floating away. They're still tied together, but we'll see how this plays out in the next couple of years on making sure that group of five is still considered a part of it. Now, granted, there are completely different rules and playing field, and the chance to get into the playoff conversation has been heavily debated. But my biggest fear is that group of five is starting to float away further and further apart. And we'll see how this plays out when it comes to leadership and taking a hold of this. There's a unique thing, especially during this pandemic. I think the country in the last month has been surrounded on Sunday nights with The Last Dance. And it's tied to North Carolina. It's where it all really began. The young man from Wilmington, North Carolina, whose presence is prevalent on the football team, too, when you look at the uniforms, it's Michael Jordan. You've got a relationship with Mike. You wear J's. I love that. I'm a big fan of that, Mac, when you're sporting your J's. What was it like for you to watch The Last Dance, and how would you describe your relationship with Mike and his presence around?
Kevin, I was here when he was playing at Chicago, and I had a great relationship with Coach Smith, Dean Smith, his coach at that time, and Roy Williams, who was on the staff as well. And because of my relationship with them, I was able to get to know Michael. And Michael came to a national championship game with us, and Michael was around. So last spring, I saw him at the Gonzaga basketball game. And I said, what are you doing giving your shoes to Michigan and giving your shoes to Oklahoma and giving your shoes to Florida? Why didn't you just keep it with your team? And he is so competitive that he said, why don't you start winning games with my team? And then we'll start talking about these shoes. But that's Michael. And I really love watching every bit of The Last Dance because I do think he's the best ever. And I know that my feelings are because he's a friend and because I kind of grew up with him here. And he has such a strong impact on our team. And at the same time, I've never seen a guy compete harder than he does. I mean, he competes every play. And I've talked to our coaches about it. And I've talked to our players about it. That's one thing that we can all do. We don't have talent like he does, but we can compete like he does. And as long as you compete like he does in your life, you're going to have a chance to be successful. So more than anything else, what I got out of it was, man, what a lesson for all of us that this guy is so tough and so competitive that he works every minute of every day to beat you. And, mm-hmm. and that hasn't changed at this time in his life either. He's still that way.
Yeah, he's just wired differently. I mean, you could be a world-class athlete, but his wiring is completely different from many, many stars that want to go to the next level. Before we wrap this up, you mentioned it a couple times. We've got to bring it up. Boy, man, that last game, you're only good as your last game. And let me tell you, you guys looked phenomenal in the bowl game against my Owls. And you mentioned that the play, you had a play. It was the Philly special? Did you call it? Did you literally call it the Kevin special?
Yes. Of course we did. Because of your ties with Philly. And I told you going into the game, Temple had a really good team. It they didn't play as well that day. But at the end of the year, Kevin, we got really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were our last three games. One of them was Mercer, and it was funny that they weren't near as good as we were. But, I mean, we were ready to play. We played great. We played hard. everybody played. It's that we took care of that game like you're supposed to. Then we dominated NC State. So the guys finally got over that hump of, are we good enough? That had kind of gotten in their heads over the last couple of years. And that's what I told them. I said, I don't know when you guys are going to realize that you're pretty good. You just don't realize it. So realize it, man. Talk about it. Think about it. And we started taking plays that showed them how good they were. And we said, you've got to learn the moments in the game that matter. And there were moments in that game where there was a sack fumble or a couple interceptions, one for a touchdown, and where Sam ran for 25 yards or something that we haven't done in the past. And the kids could see that, and they could feed off of it because we were worried. We had five or six seniors that ended up with some pro teams. Two of them got drafted, and we didn't know if they'd want to play in the bowl game or not. We didn't know if they'd worry about getting hurt. We didn't know if they'd had enough since they beat their rival the last game of the year soundly. We weren't sure. And those guys went to D.C. They had a great attitude. They played hard in the game, and they came out of there with a tremendous amount of pride.
Well, that was the silver lining, that you got the bowl win. I got the beat down. But seeing you happy on the sideline celebrating afterwards, I care about you, and I really, really am grateful that you're back in the game. We miss you at ESPN and ABC, but give Sally our love, and I cannot wait down the road in the fall where we can do more highlights of Max celebrating and maybe dancing once again.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Hug Monica and the kids for me, and love you. Always appreciate your professionalism and the class that you always show on TV. And anytime you want me on, my friend, you got me.
Thank you, Mac. Love you too, buddy. Big thank you to Mac Brown for joining us. He holds a special place in my heart. When you watch football on the weekends with him and you hear his perspective, where I had the chance to do that for a few years on ABC, can't find a better man. And wish him the best this upcoming summer and leading into the fall. And I want to remind you guys that we will get back on board now that things are starting to ramp up after the last 2 months, where we're going to, on a weekly basis, have the podcast featuring coaches from around the country, reporters from around the country, the preparations, because we are now exactly 100 days away, the taping of this podcast, 100 days away from the college football season, which starts on August 29th. So stay tuned for more episodes coming your way on a weekly basis. And a special thanks to Taylor Schwenk, our producer, on the other side here, making sure that we could put this all together. And I want to make sure you guys all are healthy and safe during this time. Just think positive. Every day we move one step closer to our sport coming back. And that is the best thing. Cannot wait. Thank you.